Hello and welcome to Runway Girl Network in Conversation, a deep dive into aviation and the passenger experience. I'm RGN Deputy Editor John Walton, and today we have something a little different for you. I'm in conversation with Dan Kerrison, Vice President of In-Flight Product at Fly Dubai. But rather than sit down in a studio, I thought we'd test out the new quieter Boeing 737 MAX 8, Fly Dubai's latest aircraft, by recording the podcast on board. Before we get started, thanks to our sponsor, Bolteron, a Simona company, purveyor of high-performance thermoplastics for tomorrow's aircraft interiors. With new and groundbreaking innovation in design capabilities, Bolteron offers airlines the ability to customize the cabin with lightweight materials with metallic effects, translucent decorative panels with unique embedded patterns, dynamic textures, vibrant pearlescence, and much more. Learn more at boltaron.com. Sitting in row 3 on board Fly Dubai's 737 MAX 8, I knew the MAX was quieter than previous aircraft, but you can listen for yourself now, with this on-the-fly recording, using just the ambient microphone of an iPhone 7 Plus. I haven't changed the sound quality at all, so you can hear how the background hum of the aircraft changes, bells, announcements and all, during this edited version of my 80-minute conversation with Dan Kerrison. I started off by asking Dan what the airline's brief was to its partners, JPA Design and Thomson Aero Seating, for the MAX.
So we came to a realization when we were beginning to develop the cabin that the airline had evolved so much in such a short period of time since we launched in 2009 that we really need to make a step change in the cabin to reflect the evolution, let's say perhaps maturity of the brand. We launched in 2009 as Dubai's low-cost carrier, 189 seats, all economy, Recaro BL 3710, you know, basic line seat, buy on board product, no IFE, no connectivity and so on. And then very quickly over a short period of time, it was 2009 we launched, 2010 we introduced in-flight entertainment, 2013 we introduced business class, lounges, you know, the whole product has evolved very quickly, and we thought that we needed the cabin to better reflect the, I think maturity is a good word, or even sophistication of the brand. It's not a luxury brand, but it's grown up since 2009, and it was important for us to use the MAX as an opportunity to really wrap everything up. It was such a great opportunity with a brand new airplane type. Very few airlines have the luxury of looking at the entire fleet, if you like, because you know, many airlines have multiple aircraft types and so on. We have one, it's a 737. So the MAX is the next generation of that airplane, all about future deliveries of MAX airplanes. So we said, you know what, this is going to be uniform across all the future fleet. We're not going to look at business class in isolation. We're not going to look at one aircraft type or variant in isolation. We're looking at everything. And you know, while in the past I had developed the cabin with a small team, essentially the CEO, Gaith and myself, we developed the German seat, for example. You know, it's like, okay, well, we're the launch customer for that seat. And we saw a concept in Hamburg one year, and we said, you know what, we like that. You know, let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah.
And they were very easy to work with. We had a lot of ability to affect change in that seat design to best suit our customers. But it was me and Gates. You know, we're not cabin interior designers. I think, you know, looking back, we did a pretty good job. I mean, the existing NG fleet looks quite respectable. But we really, you know, we really needed to reinvent this thing, and that's why we brought JPA in to look at it more holistically. And so the brief was around, you know, we were starting this program in parallel to the new cabin crew uniform program or staff uniform program, pilots, cabin crew, ground staff, and so on, engineers. And so we wanted, you know, that was a similar brief. Done a little ahead of the cabin brief, but they went hand in hand. So part of JPA's brief was, okay, we need to create a backdrop in which our crew in the new uniforms can shine, rather than we don't want to we don't want to compete with the uniform. We want the cabin to be an environment in which the uniform looks terrific and the crew look terrific. We went through a pretty extensive immersion exercise with the JPA. We brought them out to Dubai, and they spent a lot of time interviewing people right across the business, from engineering, HR, cabin crew, the PR team, the finance team, everyone. Of course, they spent time with the senior leadership team. They flew across the network on various different routes. We have a very diverse network, and so when developing a cabin interior or any kind of or any element of the in-flight product, it's quite challenging to cater to the diversity of the network we operate in, or the region we operate in. We have huge diversity in culture, religion, socioeconomic conditions. So we sent JPA off to all different corners of the network just to see what our passenger profile was like. And we had them spend quite a lot of time in Dubai too, trying to understand what's Dubai about? What is Dubai about today? What's the history of Dubai and where is it going in the future? Mm-hmm. We do represent Dubai. We're owned by the government of Dubai, and we're proud to be the airline bringing people in from that 4, 5, 6 hour radius into Dubai. So it's important that our brand reflects the spirit of Dubai today, and we think Dubai is a very modern city with great cultural heritage and history, going from such a small and undeveloped country or city as recently as 50 years ago to what it is today. And the pace of evolution of our airline has been kind of somehow aligned with that. With JPA, we took them out into Dubai, looked at the architecture. We went to the old city, went to the new city, we ate all over the place. We did big bus tours. It was full immersion, not just in our organization, but in the city of Dubai. And they came away from that and put together a number of concepts for the cabin. This process of the project was kind of managed internally by a very small group, myself and Gates, essentially. And we both placed a huge amount of trust in JPA. We decided, you know what, this is not our area of expertise. We went through a process to select the design consultancy we felt we could work well with. JPA was successful. And at that point, we turned over complete trust and said, you know what, even if we think, you know, we like this, you guys are the experts. And they were, we have a great deal of respect for the decisions that they made. They were always options for us to select from, and we were generally aligned in what JPA preferred and what we preferred. But the end result is something we're extremely proud of. They've done everything in the cabin. There's nothing in the cabin that's in the NG cabin, with the exception of the sidewall panels, which are changing with the October airplane. Everything has changed. The laminates, the curtains, carpets, emergency exit lighting, of course the seating, all of the materials, lighting. What you saw today in terms of the service wear is the old product, but that's being changed to work in with this cabin, again with JPA. From coasters to glassware and cutlery and napkins and so on, linen. So that'll come online in probably March or April. Blankets, pillows will change too. Today, again, what you see today is the old product. So the whole thing, boarding music, which again is not on board today, but will be in March, it's all been designed together to work beautifully and to work in harmony with the new uniform and the direction of the brand going forward.
In terms of the soft product changes, did you think sort of consciously, okay, we're going to install the new hard product with the old soft product to lessen the sort of big bang change process? Is that part of your thinking?
It's more about getting the soft product right rather than and trying to have it in place from day one. We were close, and when we had prototype material at the Dubai Air Show and we unveiled the airplane, well, we had enough of everything to kind of reveal it at that event. But in terms of the design process, sampling process, you know, you can make a ship set of seats. You can develop a ship set of seats faster than you can arrange your glassware and cutlery and crockery and so on, and blankets. So, yes, it's. We would have loved to have it all at the same time, but we'll be. You know, it's not far away, and it just adds a little bit more refinement to the product when it all works together.
Tell me what some of those aspects are. Those new soft product aspects that are going to zhuzh up the experience, as it were.
Well, the trace setting itself is changing. All of the materials that you had in front of you for the meal is changing. We have more capacity in the galley, a little bit, not a great deal, but in order to accommodate the footwells in the front row, there's an additional monument closet between the galley and the front of the cabin. So we're using that for additional standard unit stowage. Mm-hmm. Gives us 8 additional standard units, which is the equivalent of something like 1.5 cards. So that means that we don't need to be putting everything down for the customer in one go and having them eat the meal. So the service, you know, the dessert for that, for example, or cheese can come later. We'll have more glassware, so the glass, the wine glass that you drank from today is quite small. We'll be going to a much larger wine glass. So the additional space, yes, there's a row less of economy class seats, but we need this for the footprint for the footwell. So we were able to utilize the rest of those monuments rather than having kind of ottomans to make it a full height monument. Put additional catering equipment in there so that the service can be enhanced a little bit. You know, 6-7 hour flights. We'll take as much galley space as we can. So we'll see a very kind of, I would call it luxurious blanket coming in that again works well with all of the materials here. The amenity kit is in development too, which will be available on the longer flights, flights that are appropriate for a flatbed product, yeah. but not across the network.
What's your hour cut off for the amenity kits? Have you decided that yet?
We have not drawn a line in the sand, but the feeling is that it's around 3.5 to 4 hours. There's still we've been developing 2 products, a short haul and a long haul product, and without having nailed down a decision to proceed with one or both, but certainly the long haul, maybe not the short haul. And so, yeah, where that falls in, we think that not just in terms of amenities, but in terms of the entire product, what we offer across our network on flights, you know, with a flight, an average stage length of around 2.5 hours, is considerably more than you'll find in just about any other region in the world on a similar type of carrier. So at the same time, we maintain our low-cost kind of heritage. It's still part of our DNA. We don't refer to ourselves as a low-cost airline, but we've evolved beyond that considerably. But we're still extremely cost-conscious, and internally, we consider ourselves to be low-cost. So every decision that we make in terms of product has to be a return for that. We're not just going to be start throwing money at product to compete or try and outshine others. You know, we are Fly Dubai. It needs to make sense in the context of where we've come as a brand, and needs to be something that's functional and that there's a purpose for it. And you know, do you need a pair of socks on a flight that's 2 hours? Probably not. So let's not waste money on that. And amount of amenity kit bags that I've collected, I'm sure you collect too, is like, yeah. My God, what...
I have an entire cupboard full of them. Oh, yeah,
so
exactly.
Do I, which I'm perpetually cleaning out, but it's filling up just quickly. Yeah. And that's just, it's just landfill that's unnecessary. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, though, sort of looking at the way that soft product is evolving over, I guess what we're calling sort of the new mid-haul, the Max and the Neo, of course, enable. How do you position to customers, I guess, the expectation that, you know, what has evolved from a low-cost carrier to a fuller service carrier, and look, I mean, is now with, you know, full Zodiac Grave in-flight entertainment and flatbed seats that are the rival of many long-haul carriers. I mean, I'd rather fly in these Thomson Vantage seats than on Emirates' 777s, for example.
Sure.
How do you evolve your brand positioning to explain the premium offering in particular?
You know, I think that you've answered it almost, you almost answered your own question, in that, you know, we these airplanes are flying longer, further, and as our network has developed, we're beginning to connect a lot more passengers. If you're flying from a place like Bucharest, for example, you could be flying from Bucharest to Bangkok. You could be spending upwards of 14 hours with Fly Dubai, and so, you know, between the first sector, some transit time, lounge time, and then on to Bangkok, that's like flying to New York or even LA from Dubai. So we've recognized that, but there is a requirement for us to increase the level of comfort, let's say, on board, and that's where we arrived at a decision to introduce these flatbed seats in business class. Similarly, in economy class, the product is, the seat we're flying in economy class is a Recaro CL3710. That's a seat that normally you'd find on a wide-bodied, long-haul airplane. It's, it's not a seat that was intended to fly on narrow-bodied airplanes. It has, it offers more living space. It's not one of these slimline, low-cost carrier, lightweight types of seats. But in terms of living space, Recaro have designed the seat cleverly enough that, in fact, it offers our customers even more living space than the BL3510 that we have on the existing NG. It's about an inch of additional knee clearance, shin clearance, and distance from the eye to the screen. It has an articulating seat pan. It has an additional inch of recline. And so, again, and it has this amazing six-way kind of leather headrest. So you mentioned earlier, you'd rather fly on this business class seat than that of other airlines. I would argue that the same would be true of the seat we have in the back. It's a very, very comfortable seat. So this is really part of our commitment to provide our customers with a level of comfort that is appropriate for the way our network has evolved to be, not just point-to-point short-haul flying, but potentially up to 14 hours. Now, this project to reinvent the Fly Dubai cabin began well before we began to forge this relationship this closer relationship with Emirates. But it has turned out to be quite timely, because you could be connecting on from today's four and a half hour flight from Bucharest to Dubai. You could be then connecting on to a 14 hour flight to Australia, for example. So we'd like for the consistency of the product, to be aligned as closely as possible. And this product in business, as well as that in economy, answer the brief.
Mm-hmm. Are you planning to see any closer, let's say, synergies with your work with Emirates? I mean, an aligned soft product, for example, or content that can be shared on for the IFE system, for example. I mean, you know, for example, yeah, Emirates has that fantastic series of potted guides, bits of musical history. And now an hour of someone knowledgeable talking about the Baroque era and playing you some interesting music, for example. Is that something that is a potential part of the closer working with Emirates?
Something that we certainly will look at. There's no reason why we could not look at that. We have made a conscious decision that the two airlines will be managed independently. They'll maintain their own brands. Emirates, of course, has is probably one of the most recognizable brands in the world. Fly Dubai has in a short period since we launched, has developed quite a strong brand in our market, and especially with the reinvention of the cabin interior and new crew uniform, and we've invested a great deal in this brand. They're both strong brands in their own markets, but they're both quite different brands, and we have no intention, for example, to replace what we've developed here with ICE and Emirates in flight attendants. That's an Emirates product. We think our product complements that well. Having the benefit, I guess, of an all-new fleet and continually taking new airplanes every 2 months, this will soon become the standard across our network, and it's a very high-level system. It performs extremely well. It's very responsive. In terms of content, capacity is enormous. We make pretty good use of the capacity already. With 200 movies, about 200 television episodes, about 600 albums of music. So there's no limitation on what we can do. We want the product to be different to Emirates. If you spend 14 hours on an Emirates flight and come across to us, we don't want to give you the same product offering that you had on that flight, or vice versa. There's certainly opportunity for us to diversify our content more, but not necessarily replicate what's on offer at Emirates. From a passenger point of view, I think that answers your question. From a business point of view, there are opportunities, of course, with this close relationship, to go to source content together, perhaps, and coordinate that a little better. But we would maintain our own GUIs, and we would, in a similar way that we might coordinate our route networks, then there's certainly an opportunity for us to sit with Emirates and coordinate what the IFE product might look like.
Speaking of that route network, I noticed that on the IFE system, your three language options are English, Russian and Arabic.
Yes.
Does that reflect the historical or future route aspirations in terms of the languages that are being served?
Certainly historical. Those have always been the three official languages of Fly Dubai. It's quite simple, draw a circle around Dubai and you capture 2.5 billion people. It's about a third of the world's population live in that circle within reach of Fly Dubai, and the three most commonly spoken languages across that region are English, Arabic and Russian. A lot of cities in Russia, CIS, Ukraine, a lot of cities in Saudi, 13 cities in Saudi, and then of course the rest of the GCC. So Arabic is a no-brainer, English, of course, and Russian. There are many languages spoken in our network that aren't captured by those three, but yeah, it's kind of the 80-20 rule, I guess. And the GUI is available in those three languages. But content is available in all of these languages.
Right, so I see, yeah.
So
a dozen or so languages there.
Right. We continue to look at how the route network evolves and whether there's a requirement for additional languages. It's a decision that needs to be made at a corporate level, because it's the website, it's everything, that the PR team do, the marketing team, advertising team, and my team. So it's a huge exercise to add a language, but it's something that we continue to assess the requirement for
In terms of the aiming the in-flight product at those key markets, what aspects of that product have been developed to meet the needs of the Fly Dubai network as opposed to any other regional long-haul carrier? Because, I mean, at this point with the MAX, you guys are nearly a long-haul carrier at this point for some of the routes.
Yeah, potentially. Again, that's, you know, it's... we try, in the development of the product, we try to be uniquely Fly Dubai, but at the same time, having a product that can be that can work in this incredibly diverse region in which we operate. So it's difficult. The easiest way to meet that to meet the needs of that demographic is to develop a vanilla product, and that's not the way Fly Dubai approaches it. So we've tried to be uniquely Fly Dubai, representative of our hometown, Dubai, of course, but sensitive, culturally sensitive, I guess, to everywhere that we operate. There's no, we've never said, you know what, we're going to Saudi, we're going to, you know, let's change what the way we do things across the network. There are certain requirements and regulations that we need to comply with in different places that we operate. Saudi's a good example. There's no alcohol allowed on Saudi flights, so we remove the alcohol from the flights, and so on. The menus, generally, we try not to have route-specific menus. Again, it comes down to the economics of being able to provide a high-level product that are at a attainable price point, if you like. So we try not to have too many variations of the menu. You'll never get the same thing in and out if you're flying from one place to another. We do have regions of menus, so if you're connecting through, you're not going to get the same meal on any of the four sectors that you fly. But we're not going to have different wine offerings on different routes. We're not going to have Thai food on Bangkok flights and goulash on our Eastern European flights. It's about balancing the needs of the customer with the economics of providing the product.
Later in the conversation, Dan and I discussed how the airline keeps its product fresh, particularly with the various tranches of 737 it's taken throughout its history and will take in its future.
Innovation is kind of at the heart of everything we do, and we're always seen to be the launch customer for something. And in the case of the MAX airplane, we're the launch customer, or the regional launch customer, for the MAX, which meant that I think we ended up receiving the second or third, maybe the third 737 MAX from Boeing. So, coupled with that, we somewhat unusually take all of our aircraft from Boeing empty. Zero packs, and we install the cabin interior ourselves. That's seats, galley, seats, IFE, and connectivity, carpets and soft finishing and so on. We do that for a number of reasons. Economically, it makes a lot of sense to us, but it's more historically. When we selected the Lumexus IFE system, and Lumexus was not offerable at Boeing. So Lumexus is a great example. Lumexus was the only system available that could offer every customer, would allow every customer on the airplane to watch high definition content simultaneously. It was half the weight and a third of the cost. Panasonic, Thales, Rockwell at the time, any of their competitors. It was a no-brainer, fantastic technology, and the future. But Boeing wouldn't put it on. And because we like to always be a ahead of the curve in terms of technology and innovation, generally we're not able to get Boeing to do it for us. Boeing, there's a bit of lag time there. That was the case for Jevon as well. So we ended up doing the Lumexus program post-delivery. We take the airplane empty, install Recaro seats and Jevon IFE in a 189, sorry, a Lumexus IFE in a 189 configuration post-delivery. Then we decided to install business class. Business class was a Jevon seat we selected. That was a seat that made the most sense to us. We were the launch customer for that seat. It was a whole new kind of concept for Jevon.
Jevon Komodo, right?
Komodo, yeah. And again, they were not offered by Boeing yet. They were just starting the process. So at that time, Lumexus was starting to become offerable at Boeing. So had we continued in an all economy configuration, then that might have been able to do that at Boeing. These seats, Thompson seats, Boeing are looking at installing and probably will, certainly will, maybe later this year even for another customer. Would not have been able to support our program. Zodiac IFE would not have been able to be installed for the Maxwell. So we're always trying to get the latest technology, latest seats on the airplane, and the sad case is that Boeing are often a couple of generations behind. Same is true of Panasonic IFE, same is true of connectivity, for example. So our direction has been to install post-delivery. If we had wanted Global Eagle connectivity installed by Boeing on this first 737 MAX 8, then they probably would have done it, as they have done for Southwest. But they wouldn't do the seats, they wouldn't do the IFE. They would do the economy class seat, but not with that IFE. So connectivity, Boeing require every airline, regardless of what system you're using, to use a Boeing radome. That's kind of a new thing that they've developed. Which could be argued, a bit difficult to make a determination on this without all of the data, but could be argued there's more drag on that radome than there is on the GE radome, for example. No one's quite sure on how Gogo are going to install 2KU antennas because they won't fit under the Boeing radome, and so there are some issues there. But because we needed to do our connectivity as an STC and wouldn't do it at Boeing, then it required an STC, which requires data, airframe data, bird strike data, all this type of thing. And that data just wasn't available because it was a new airplane, new type certificate. So in the absence of that data, we couldn't, our integrator, our partner at HACO, who work on our STCs, they just couldn't develop an STC in the absence of data. Data is available now, the STC is being developed, and the first six MAX, which have gone into service without connectivity, will have the system installed by the end of the first half of the year. So that's it, really. It's not ideal, but we have 61. We have 61 aircraft in the fleet. 62, and 51 of them have connectivity. The rest are either these MAX airplanes, or a few of our very, very first airplanes that are being returned to the lessors soon, in the coming months. So we're quite well covered, and as much as I would love to have connectivity on today's flight and live TV, we're not there yet, but we will be soon.
It was really refreshing throughout my discussion how open and transparent Dan was around the challenges and opportunities facing Flow Dubai. This really is a little, well, indeed not so little, airline to watch. That's it for today's conversation. We certainly hope you enjoyed it, and we're always keen to find out what you think. Please feel free to email me at john@runwaygirlnetwork.com with any suggestions. Thank you to our guest, Dan Kerrison of Fly Dubai. Dan's on LinkedIn, and you can follow the airline on Twitter @FlyDubai. As ever, you can find me on Twitter @ThatJohn, and everything from RGN @RunwayGirl and @RunwayGirlNetwork.com. If you're enjoying these conversations, please do leave a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you for listening.